from all the devotees to the daily evening Bhagavad Gita class. We have reached chapter 5, text number 4 today, and this is the text that is written on the board. So we'll chant it together. First I'll chant it, then you chant it, and the rest of the two verses, that is text number 5 and text number 6, I'll read it from the textbook. I'll read it from Bhagavad Gita. Sankhya Yogau Prithak Bala Pravadanti Na Panditaha Ekam Api Asthita Samyag Ubhayor Vindate Phalam. Translation is, only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world, that is Sankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. Text number 5 and text number 6, I'll read from the Bhagavad Gita textbook that I have here. Yad sankhyai prapyate sthanam tad yogairapi gamyate ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha yapashyati sapashyati. Translation. One who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. Text number 6. Sanyasastu mahabaho dukkham aptum ayogatah yoga yukto munir brahma na chirena digachati. Translation. Merely renouncing all activities, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the Supreme without delay. Prabhupada has very nicely explained these three verses. However, if we read the whole translations, it will take a long amount of time. I have tried to summarize the purpose of these verses, so let's see. Text number 4, he is speaking, the aim of the analytical study of the material world is to find the soul of existence. And then he says that the soul of the material world is Lord Vishnu. And a real student of Sankhya philosophy will serve Lord Vishnu. In text number 5, he says, the real purpose of philosophical research is to find the ultimate goal of life. Since the ultimate goal of life is self-realization, there is no difference between the conclusions reached by these two processes, which is one is analytical study and other is serving the Lord. Text number 6, he gives understanding of two types of sannyasis or people in the renounced order. The one class is jnanis, or sometimes called mayavadis, who are interested only in analytical study, which is being discussed today. And the other class of sannyasis are Vaishnava sannyasis, who not only study the scriptures, but also try to serve the Lord in different capacities. So this is roughly the purport summarization that Prabhupada has given us. We'll just try to see how to understand the concepts that are presented in these verses today. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Bhagavad Gita, there are 5 main topics that have been identified by Acharyas in the Bhagavad Gita. These topics are the Lord, the living entity, karma, time, and material nature. Now of these, the most attractive and most important for us to learn is about the Lord and the spirit soul. Time we observe around us, and there are many explanations that are given by other people also. Material nature, the nature that is around us, the world around us, can also be explained, can also be described, can be photographed, stored in our memories. Karma, our activities, we can understand we are acting in different capacities, we get different results for it. However, the spirit soul, that is you and me, the living entity, and the Supreme Lord is nowhere to be seen. Other three we can see in the world around us. So you could have other textbooks, other books, other authors who could explain these other three things. But when it comes to Bhagavad Gita, the superiority of the Bhagavad Gita is that it explains these two subject matters which are not presented in any other textbooks by any other people. That is where Bhagavad Gita scores. So Bhagavad Gita tells us about spiritual life, and there are, if you could say, there are two divisions in spiritual life. What are these two divisions? These two divisions is understanding who is the Lord, who is the Supreme Lord, and understanding who am I. If you could cover these two topics, then you could say that you're advancing in spiritual life, because the other three, you could, the information you could get in other textbooks also, other branches of knowledge also. Geography covers the nature around us and like that. So understanding oneself, if we take the first thing, that is understanding oneself, in one sense it is practical, it is feasible. I look at myself in the mirror, try to understand. When I was a 5-year-old child, I had a different face. I had a different small body. Now I'm grown up, now I have a different body. So in one sense it's practical, it's feasible. But when it comes to understanding the Supreme Lord, which is the fifth item that we discussed just now, it's very difficult. People in the West, people in the East also, but more in the West, have tried to grapple with this idea, have tried to analyze who is God, what is his nature, how does he look, how does he talk, how does he walk, how does he stay, what are his activities. These are some of the concepts that have bewildered people traditionally in the West and in the East. In the West today, because they have taken this approach of trying to analyze things. If you look at yourself, what you can see is your body. And what you can sense is your mind, because you have emotions. So although you don't see your mind, but you can understand there is a mind. So on your own, on the basis of your own intelligence, at the most, when trying to understand yourself, you could reach the platform of the body, that you could have detailed understanding of your body, or you could have detailed understanding of your mind. So when it comes to study of the body, you have the medical sciences. And when it comes to study of the mind, you have psychology, psychiatry, and like that. But nothing beyond that. No Western university has a department for studying spiritual knowledge, trying to understand who is that person who thinks. Because mind is something that helps you think. But there has to be some person who thinks. So there's no knowledge about that. There's no department about that. So at the most, with your own intelligence, you can't go beyond body and mind. What happens is, when we get entrapped in that approach of trying to understand things analytically, we also try to apply that approach to understanding the other subject matter, that is trying to understand the Lord. When we try to understand the Lord through our own intelligence, it's not possible. There's this small story. One person was in a barber's shop trying to get a shave. And his barber was saying, you know what, actually I don't think God exists. He's just talking to the person who's having a shave. So he says, I don't believe that God exists. This person who's having a shave, he does not understand why is he saying that. So he asks him, why are you saying that? So this barber, he points out through a window outside and says, see those people there? There is so much poverty in this world. I know of one person who's a very good person at heart. He always helps people. But in his own life, if you observe, he has undergone many difficulties. So there is no justice, apparently. I don't see any justice. I see so many poor people. So it means there is no God. This person who's having a shave, he does not retort. He does not reply immediately. Lets him come. Calm down. The barber let him calm down. Then he says, actually, if you ask me, I don't think there are many barbers in this country. Actually, I don't think there is any barber in this country. There are no barbers in this country. Now, he's saying this as he's having that shave. So obviously that barber is disturbed and he says, what do you mean there's no barber? Here I am. Here you are having a shave right now. How could you say that? So he says, look there out there. And there is this person with long hair. And there's this person with a big beard. And he says, see those people out there? They're having a big beard. They're having long hair. So it means there are no barbers. The barber is very quick, very fast to point out. barbers exist. I exist and many other barbers like me exist, but the people whom you are pointing out who have a long beard, who have long hair, they have chosen not to come and visit us. If they come and visit us, we'll shave them up. If they come and visit us, we'll give them a good haircut. But it is their choice that they don't come, they don't visit the barber anytime. This person who was having a shave was very fast now to reply, similarly, my dear friend, God exists. But different people out there have made their own choice not to follow his path, not to lead their life based on his principles. So if there is evil in this world, if there is apparently no justice in this world, who's to blame? Is it God who's to blame, or is it people who have chosen not to follow him by their own volition, by their own will? And the barber got his message. Now there was no more argument. But there are few people like this who are willing to argue for the cause of God. So in the West today, atheism is very rampant. There are many books that are coming out which have very flashy titles, which have very agitating titles. There's one book called The God Delusion. It's very popular. It mentions how believing in God is the biggest delusion, is the biggest illusion that people can have. And such books are making a lot of sales in the West. But if one has proper understanding, even by common logic, we can prove that God exists. So we have these two understandings that if you come to study yourself, you can reach at the most your body, or you could go a little bit deeper and reach the mind. But even that much deeper, you cannot go when it comes to God. So how do you understand God? Let us try to understand this by a simple example. If this room right now, the lights, if they are shut out, we won't be able to see ourselves. We won't be able to see each other also. However, when the light is switched on, not only are you able to see me, not only are you able to see yourself, but you're also able to see the whole room, who's sitting here, what kind of paintings are here. Similarly, God, or trying to understand God, is compared to the sun casting light on our lives. In darkness, in oblivion of God, in absence of knowledge about God, in one sense, we can't even understand ourselves. And that's why you see in the West that at the most, they can reach to the mind level. They don't know who's that person who's inhabiting the body, who's thinking those emotions that are manifested through the mind. So in the absence of knowledge about God, they don't even have proper knowledge about themselves. Now it sounds weird actually, because if I don't have knowledge about myself, how am I going to live? How am I going to survive in a proper way? Minimum is that I have knowledge about myself. But taking this example of the lights as a third party, as a third object, illuminating our lives, making us able to see ourselves, and making us able to see each other, and making us able to see the world around us. This is a good example to understand how knowledge about God will not only give us knowledge about God, but also knowledge about you and me, knowledge about us. We'll come to this example later. So there is one thing called Atma Sakshatkar, which is a term that is used regularly by people. And there is another term which is called Bhagavat Sakshatkar. So Atma Sakshatkar means realizing our own selves, and Bhagavat Sakshatkar means realizing who God is. Generally, people think they are one and the same, because they mistake Atma to be the same as Paramatma. And they think if somebody has achieved Atma Sakshatkar, then automatically he has achieved Bhagavat Sakshatkar. But no, it's not like that. In fact, it's the reverse. Just as by the sun revealing itself, we see you and me, we see the world around us. Similarly, Bhagavat Sakshatkar, that is realizing God, entails, means automatically that Atma Sakshatkar is already involved. So when we are trying to understand ourselves and we are trying to understand God, if we come to this conclusion that unless we have mercy of the Lord, like in this example, we have mercy of the sun, we won't be able to realize ourselves. Then we can understand God, material nature, time, karma, and even us. These are the five main topics of Bhagavad Gita in a proper way. Then we'll have a proper understanding. Otherwise, any other analytical approach to understanding who we are, who God is not going to serve any purpose. In today's verse, Arjuna here, if you see here, He says, Krishna is saying this. He says, Sankhya Yoga Prithak Bala Prabhadanti Na Pandita. Pandita is a familiar word, an intelligent person. And Sankhya is analytical study. Yoga is devotional service. And Prithak Bala. Prithak Bala means an unintelligent person. A small child, an unintelligent person. He thinks that analytical study and serving God, devotional service are different. So it seems that Arjun, he is confused here because he thinks that work, that is activities, and renunciation, they are two different things. And Krishna seems to be here in this verse, seems to be advising him that they are not different, they are one and the same. So we'll try to see how they are the same. It's normal observation, if you are sitting silently here, you are not working. Is it not? Now that you are listening to this class, you are not working. You are not working actively with your hands and legs. So in one sense, you could say that you have renounced activities right now at this moment. And if somebody is walking, like some people are coming here to take darshan, they are walking. So they are not silent. They have not renounced their activity. So yes, from an ordinary point of view, from our common point of view, work and renunciation are two opposite concepts. They cannot be together. Like day and night. Either it's daytime or it's nighttime. It can't be both. So Arjun's doubt or Arjun's confusion that he's having is not very unbona fide. It's a proper doubt. It's a proper confusion that he has. But the work that Krishna is advising here in this verse when he says yoga is not ordinary work. He has already mentioned in 4th chapter, 41st verse that this work that he's mentioning is work in devotional service where renunciation is not of activity but of tendency to enjoy fruits of the activity. He's already made that clear in 4th chapter. And then he said, Atishta Uttishta Bharata. And that is where all the confusion started. He mentioned devotional service, but then he said, now get up and fight. So he said, wait a minute. First you told me to sit down. First you told me to practice knowledge. And now you are telling me to get up and fight. And then this confusion started. And that is why Krishna is replying here. That the whole thing is not to renounce activities, but to renounce the tendency to enjoy the activities. Today, if you see, people are very much attached to enjoying the fruits of our activities. There's this small joke. Long time before, people were very pious. People were very inclined to serve the Lord. So all the money that they earned would be given to the Lord. As days passed by, their faith in God decreased. So now, while giving all their money to God, they had some hesitation in their heart. So what they used to do? They used to draw a line on the ground, throw their money in the air, and whatever falls to the left of the line, that is God's. And whatever falls to the right of the line is ours to keep. Now, this was, you know, some money of course would fall on this side and they would keep that. In due course of time, even this tendency was reduced. Why to give so much to the Lord? So they used to draw a circle on the ground. And then they used to throw money in the air. Now whatever falls in the circle, that is God's. And whatever falls outside the circle, that is mine. So this also reduced the amount of money that was given to God a little bit more. Now it is said, people say that yes, I want to give my money to God. So they just throw all the money in the air and they say, whatever you want, you can keep it. Whatever falls down is mine. So, you know, it shows that now people don't want to give anything to the Lord. They want to keep everything to themselves. So, how do we understand what Krishna is saying here? In just the yesterday's verse, that is text number 3, Krishna very nicely explains this. He says, Gyeya sa nitya sannyasi yona dveshti na kankshati. So, when he talks about renunciation, he is not talking about a person who just artificially dresses up like a renunciant. No. He says, Gyeya sa nitya sannyasi. Nitya sannyasi means he is a sannyasi in all respects, every time, all moments, who yona dveshti na kankshati, who does not hate the fruits of his activities and neither he desires kankshati, the fruits of his activities. So according to Krishna, just in the verse previous to this verse, the definition of a renouncer has also been made clear. A renouncer is not a person who has stopped doing his activities, but according to Krishna, na dveshti na kankshati, a person who does not hate the fruits of his actions and neither he desires the fruit of his actions. So in that context, then when we study this verse, it becomes very clear. The two terms that are used, which appear to be contradictory to Arjun today, are Sankhya and Yoga. So this word Sankhya is very simple to understand. It comes from the root word Sankhya. Sankhya is counting. Even in Hindi and Marathi, Sankhya means counting. So Sankhya Yoga basically means people who are trying to analytically understand, they are trying by analyzing each and every element of this world. You have the Mendeleev's periodic table. Those who have studied science, they have the Mendeleev's periodic table where the 108 elements have been categorized. Sodium, calcium, potassium, right up to titanium and all that, plutonium. So all these elements, if you see, they can be grouped in one category, that is earth. Krishna says there are 8 different elements in this material world. What are they? Bhumir apo analo vayu kham mano buddhir evacha ahankara ityanme bhinna prakritir ashtada. So out of that, the 5 gross elements are earth, water, fire, air and ether. Now this Mendeleev's periodic table is just the systematic analysis of the only one element, that is the earth element. And they have studied it so deeply that they have analyzed different elements. What about different types of air? What about different types of water? What about different types of fire? So much analysis could be done about these also. And still, even after doing this analysis, according to the Vedic point of view, you have just counted 5 elements. That's it. In the Vedic scriptures, it is explained there are 49 different types of air. Right now, in English language, we just know breeze, maybe slow wind, something like that. 49 different types of air. So many types of fire also. There are different types of fire also. We don't know of different types of fire. Sometimes we see a blue flame and sometimes we see a yellow flame. So at the most, somebody analytical here could point out, no, sir, I believe that there are 2 kinds of fire. But there are different kinds of fire also. And in the Vedic scriptures, they have been analyzed completely. The Vedic scriptures has no dearth of knowledge about all these things. But what Krishna is saying here is, Sankhya means you analyze the other elements also. What is the mind? What is the intelligence? What is the false ego? What are the 5 karmendriyas? What are the 5 gyanendriyas? Knowledge acquiring senses, active senses. So much knowledge has been analyzed and put forward. However, all this analysis only helps you categorize things. It may not help you in the real sense. If you know now that there are 108 elements, now how does it serve you? How does it help you? It does not help you in any sense. But if you know how to use sodium in the form of salt, that is sodium chloride, then it is of some use to you, is it not? Otherwise, it's just an empty chart. It does not serve any purpose. But in its practical form, in the form of salt, that is sodium chloride, then sodium and chlorine mean something to you. They gain some importance for you. So, a real student, suppose talking about you and me, when we study chemistry and when we arrive at this table and we just analytically study this table, let's say, a modern scientific student, he just analyzes these elements and studies these elements, but does not do any research, does not do any practical activity based on that information that he has in that table, is it of any use? No. So a real student does not only study the facts that are presented in the textbook, but acts on it. In all colleges, in all universities, in all branches, you have theory that is taught in the textbooks, that is taught in the classrooms, and then you have practicals in the laboratory where you confirm what is there that is taught in the textbooks. Without practical knowledge, without practicals being performed, the theoretical knowledge will be of no use. But how will you perform practicals if you don't have knowledge? So both are necessary. Similarly, a person who just stops at analyzing, so a Sankhya yogi, as mentioned in Krishna today, he just analyzes. What is this wood? It looks like earth element. It's tree. So you plant a small seed and out grows a tree. But there's some water also in it. So there's some water. Also, if you burn it, wood burns. There are some elements which don't burn. So there has to be some fire in it. And you agitate that fire, you bring out that fire with the help of some igniting substance. So wood as a substance can be analyzed to be composing of 3 elements, at least till now. there is some earth prominently, there is some water, because when it dries it compresses, and there is some fire element also present in wood. Similarly, the Sankhya yogi, he just goes on analyzing, what is this, what is that, how many elements in this, what, how many elements in that, but he does not do anything practical based on that. He just stops at analyzing. His whole life is spent in analyzing. He's the Vedic contemporary of Einstein, you know, long hair, just keeps on analyzing things. He's always thinking, what about this, what about that? That is a Sankhya yogi. The other process that is mentioned by Krishna here, yoga, is devotional service. What is devotional service? Devotional service is acting. Devotional service. Service means activity. So activity which is based on the knowledge. So coming back to our original example, this is practicals that are performed in the laboratory based on the knowledge that you got. So Sankhya yoga or Sankhya yogi, he stops only at analyzing, whereas a person who's engaged in service of the Lord in the proper way is engaged in the next step that is based on that. How could we understand this? Let's say you have a garden and you have a gardener who takes care of the garden. Now, a big scientist, a big analyst who understands things, he could come and try to analyze by looking at the tree. How does the tree stand? It requires life. How does it get life? It requires nutrients. From where does it get nutrients? It gets it from the ground. How does it get from the ground? There have to be roots, although I can't see the roots. So his analysis is very nice, and it's true that without roots, the tree won't stand. However, the person who's engaged in devotional service, he goes the next step, and what does he do? He waters the root of the tree. Imagine that there is a tree, and there is an analyst, there is a Sankhya yogi, who just is whole day analyzing the structure of the tree. He says there must be the roots, and there must be some vessels inside which transmit the water to the different leaves, branches, fruits, and so on. And he's just analyzing. He does not do any activity like watering that root. Will the tree last? After some time, it's going to wither away. But a person engaged in devotional service, he just waters the root of the tree. Now, sometimes you could also have people who do not actually understand how the roots suck water. How there is transpiration from the leaves, how water is thrown out, and then, you know, there is suction that is there. He does not understand all the complex things. His father was a gardener. He is a gardener. His father told him, if you want this garden to go on, if you want the trees to prosper, take some water every day and periodically water the trees. And he does that and he achieves success. Now, the thing is, if the first person is stopping only at analyzing, is he a real student? Like in the modern context, if a person is just studying knowledge and he never goes to practicals, if somebody is studying medicine, there are some medicine students here, they have their classes where the human anatomy is taught, but then they have practicals also, and at the end of their course, teaching course, they have internship also, where they have to actually practice on patients. If there is some person who just attends all classes and never practices internship, he never reports to his postings, how much knowledge will he have? How much practical knowledge will he have? If an architect, he undergoes all education in his classroom, and then he also has to undergo some training, apprenticeship. If he does not practice in that apprenticeship, how strong, how good an architect he will be, how intelligently he will design buildings? I have doubts about that. Is it not? So a real student, even if he is of a Sankhya yoga, even if he's a Sankhya yogi, if he's a real Sankhya yogi, he'll go that extra step and he'll try to do something based on the knowledge that he has. So he has analysis. He has analyzed the different ways in which the tree is surviving, tree is prospering, but he goes a step forward and he actually waters the root of the tree based on his analysis. Now, in this verse, Krishna says, Ekam api asthitam samyak. You see the third line? Ekam api asthitam samyak. Samyak means full. Like you have sankirtan. Sankirtan is samyak kirtan. So asthitam samyak means he has to complete his endeavor. So his endeavor cannot stop in between that only I'll study. No. A real Sankhya yogi has to complete his study by doing practicals, by doing service that is based on the knowledge. So certainly, just like a person, a gardener will surely water the tree, similarly, a real Sankhya yogi will also water the tree. Without that, both are incomplete. So one has a lot of analysis, but the other has simple understanding that I have to water the root of the tree, and both achieve the same results. It's not that the mangoes, the fruits on one tree where this person has analyzed and then watered the roots will taste any better, will taste any more sweeter than the mangoes or the fruits from a tree where the gardener has, without analysis, just watered the root of the tree. It's not like that. So one may water the root of the tree with knowledge and the other may water the tree without knowledge, but the taste, the end result of the tree, the taste of the fruits is going to be the same. There's no evidence that if you water the root of the tree with a lot of knowledge about how it works, the fruits come out tastier, the fruits come out sweeter. No, there's no evidence like that. But let's try to understand this in a better way. If one tries to come to a deeper understanding, one could understand that these are just two perspectives on the same process. End result is to get the fruits from the tree, and there are two perspectives. Sometimes you go to a fair, mela, and there is this funny mirror house. You've seen sometimes you enter a mirror house, the whole place is full of mirrors, and when you enter, suddenly you see yourself in a mirror and you appear to be fat, or you appear yourself to be a very thin person. It's just a game of mirrors. Sometimes you have a convex mirror and sometimes you have a concave mirror. A concave mirror is a convergent mirror. So any person who sees himself in a concave mirror will see himself to be small in size, will see himself to be thin. Whereas a person who sees himself in a convex mirror will see himself in a divergent view. So he'll appear bigger than he is already. He'll appear taller than he is. The person is the same. Person does not change. But the mirror makes him feel that he is different. Is it not? Similarly, in this, actually the process is the same. What is the process? The process is watering the root of the tree. But there are two perspectives. One perspective is, first you analyze. What happens when I pour water? What happens inside the tree when I pour water? And then I get the fruits. But the other person, who's a simple person, he just waters the root of the tree. He's a person who's engaged in devotional service to the Lord. He does not care much about analysis of different material elements. He analyzes, he puts water. He might have to do some analysis, mind it. He might have to do some analysis. What time of the day do I pour water? How much quantity of water do I pour? But when I say he does not do much analysis, it means he does not do much analysis of the process that goes inside the tree. He analyzes, how much water should I pour? Where should I pour? When should I pour? That much analysis he does. But he does not spend time uselessly trying to figure out every small detail of the tree. That is his difference. So, same process, but two different perspectives. Just like same person, but he will appear in two different ways in a house of mirrors. Now, if you analyze scrutinizingly, that you go step by step, you analyze all the different elements, then you will see that the spirit soul, you and me, the living entity, is not of this world. Because all the elements here, be it earth, water, fire, air, and ether, they are temporary. They wither away after some time. Any object that you see here undergoes decay. After some time, the object reduces in size, reduces in quality, reduces in attributes. But the living entity does not. So it means by nicely, actually, if you analyze, if you reach the peak of study, of analysis, of this world around us, you'll understand that the living entity does not belong to this world. However, the elements that make up our body could belong to this world. So if the living entity does not belong to this world, then what is it? It's not material, it is spiritual. So if Sankhya Yoga tells you, analysis tells you that you are a spirit soul, then devotional service tells you how to act now based on this information that you are a spirit soul. So Sankhya Yoga tells you, informs you that you are a spirit soul, you don't belong to this world, you are a spiritual part and parcel of God. But devotional service goes a step ahead and tells you, now my dear friend, now that you are a spirit soul, you don't belong to this world, do these activities. These are the activities that you should do that are based on the spiritual concept of life. But if we are spiritual and if we need to act on the spiritual platform, because that's what we are, a fish, if you take it outside water, can it survive? No. So a fish has to be put in water. That's where it belongs. If you take some animal who is used to stay on land and you put it inside water, however good, nice, refreshing, pure, clear water is, it's not of any use to him. So it helps us a lot to first identify who you are, who I am. And then we can plan out accordingly what to do. If you have identified correctly that a fish does not survive outside water and it should be kept inside water, then this is the right understanding. You put fish inside water and it's happy. Similarly, you take an animal which resides on land and you try to put it in water, it's unhappy. So you just take it out and it's happy. Similarly, when we understand that you and me are not belonging to this material world, we are spirit souls, then we'll have to act on that platform. Just like a fish has to be kept in water to properly prosper, to properly be happy. An animal on land has to be properly kept on land for it to become happy. So for you and me, by analysis, by Sankhya Yoga, if we understand that we are spirit souls and we try to enjoy matter, we try to become happy in this world, it's not going to help us. So we have to act on the spiritual platform. But the analysis, the Sankhya Yoga, is analysis only of the material elements. That's why the Sankhya Yoga cannot help us when it comes to spiritual activities. For spiritual activities, we have to take lessons from somebody who himself has realized his spiritual position or from God directly. When they will give us activities, when they will give us understanding of what a person is supposed to do when he realizes that he is spiritual, then we'll be able to act on that platform and then only will we be happy. Just like a fish is happy only in water, just like an animal on land is happy only in that situation. Similarly, you and me, because we are spiritual, we will be happy only in spiritual activities. So what are those spiritual activities? And how do we get out of this conception of material activities? So we can understand, right now we are attached to matter, we are right now attached to material activities, and we have to detach from material activities, material conception, and attach ourselves to spiritual activities. Take for example that I have a rock in my hand and I have to pick up this book. Now there are two processes. One process is I keep that rock down and then with my free hands, with my empty hands, I pick up this book. The other process is with that rock in my hand, I directly go and pick up this book. While doing that, the rock will fall down because my hands are not so big that they can handle both. So in the first activity, I deliberately put the rock down, maybe put this book down, and then with my empty hands, I pick this book. In the other case, I have this book, I go here, but I can't pick this book. So I have to leave this and then I take this. So in doing that, automatically the object that I had in my hands previous to picking up this object is automatically taken care of. So, when we want to attach ourselves to spiritual activities, when we want to attach ourselves to spiritual conception, there are two ways. One way is you analyze very nicely. You analyze that actually I'm spirit soul, I'm not matter. So then you give up material activities. You detach yourself from material activities. And the other process is you directly take up to spiritual activities under the guidance of somebody. And when you take that, automatically you will give up your material activities. Because if all your activities are spiritual, then where is the time to do material activities? Now, the first process, if you ask anybody, it sounds very systematic. It sounds that the person, he had this book in his hand, then he left it, then his hands were empty, then he went here, he took it up. Whereas in the other case, it sounds abrupt, that this person, without taking care of his previous engagements, directly went here. But mind you, what is it that makes the second activity abrupt? And what is it that makes the first activity systematic, or at least it appears to be systematic? It is that if I don't have any attachment, any attraction to this first. So suppose I have attraction. I have a lot of attraction for this book. It's a huge book, nice book, clean book. Now I have attachment for it. So then, you know, while giving it up, I have to think twice. I have to say, good book, but then I have to think over again and again. Should I not? So there is some time that is consumed in it. And then I'll pick up this. So it is the breaking up of the process into two different processes that makes this systematic. But suppose a person who does not have any attachment for this, it does not have any attraction for this. If this person says, I have this book, but this sounds like a better printed book. This is an empty book. This has some handwriting, but this is looks good. So without any attachment, if he gives this up and takes this book, then it is not abrupt. Then it is not system. Then it is not unsystematic. What is it that makes this abrupt is, this person might be liking this book. This person might have some attachment for the activities that he was already doing. And now, abruptly, my dear friend, you are jumping to those activities. All this time, your life, you never did any spiritual activity. And now, abruptly, you are going for spiritual activities. What about your material activities? This is true and this is abrupt only if that person still has interest in material activities. You get my point? If that person does not have any attraction for those material activities, then even this act of directly starting spiritual activities is one and the same. I'll come to this point later because this is a very important concept in trying to understand how attaching to spiritual activities automatically involves detachment from material activities. How attachment to Krishna or God automatically involves detachment from matter. Whereas normally our conception would be, first you try to analyze what are your material activities, then slowly you try to detach them, and then you take to spiritual activities, and then it will be very nice. But here Krishna says, Sankhya Yoga Prithak Bala Pravadanti Na Pandita. Pandita, the real intelligent person, sees no difference in these two activities. Which are these two activities? Trying to detach from matter and trying to attach to Krishna. For us, Prithak Bala, for a Balak, for a small child, it appears to be two different activities. But according to Krishna, no. So we'll try to see that now. One thing is that if one renounces his material activities with impure hearts, if he still has some attachments, if he still has some desires to enjoy material activities, to enjoy material fame, material pleasures, then yes, that's a dangerous situation. Just like I said, that if I have attachment to this textbook, and then with that attachment, with this in my hand, then I take this, then it sounds abrupt. But if I don't have any attachment, I don't even look at this book going down. I just directly lift this book. So what matters, or what is important in our discussion is, whether this person still has impurities in his heart. If a person has impurities in his heart, and artificially he takes to spiritual activities, artificially if he renounces, then that's a problem. Then, in due course of time, this person will be forced by his proclivities, by his tendencies in his heart, to come back to his original platform. If I have attachment for this book and I take this book and keep it here, then maybe there is a chance that I'll still look at it. Why? Because I have still some attachment for this book. But if I don't have any attachment, if I don't have any attraction, then this will not happen. So one thing that differentiates true renunciation from false renunciation, artificial renunciation, is whether there are still some vestiges, there are still some remnants of our material attractions, of interest in material things in our heart. If they are there, in due course of time, our activities will again go back to material activities, and that will cause us a lot of suffering. Why? Now we have taken to spiritual life. Now doing material activities while staying in a spiritual life, that's going to be incompatible. At least before, you are a materialist. At least before, you are practicing material life, and people expected certain behavior, certain activities from you, and that matched. So no problem. Now you have taken to spiritual life. Now people see you in a different light. Now you are a spiritualist. Now if you go back, revert back to your material activities, that's going to cause you a lot of discomfort. This is one of the arguments that Krishna uses against Arjun, saying that you are a Kshatriya. Arjuna is saying, I'm not going to fight. So you are a Kshatriya. You are used to fighting. So now artificially, if you give up fighting in due course of time, believe me, for sure, those tendencies will again sprout in your heart, and again you will come, and again you will fight. Now I am telling you to fight, so there is no sin. But then, when you will fight on your own, based on your tendencies, there will be sin. So fight, you are. You are bound to fight. But now that I am telling you to fight, fight now, not later. So we have to be careful whether there are some impurities still left in our heart. Now contrast this to spiritual devotional service. Devotional service has multiple engagements for the devotees. Here if you see, there is some kirtan going on. Just before we started this class, there was kirtan, beautiful kirtan. Nice music, many instruments were being played. One beautiful singer with a beautiful voice was singing. There was one person who was doing aarti there. Here you are listening to this small class. Here I am talking to you. After that also, before coming to this class, I was preparing, so I had to read this book. After that, maybe somebody of you have some questions and there will be some question and answer session. So many engagements. You have to cook for the Lord. That's how you get prasadam. When you walk out, you get beautiful prasadam there. All this has to be done. So there are many engagements in devotional service. But if you have renounced artificially, then what will happen? Because you have not taken up to spiritual activities, because you have still some attractions inside your heart, then there is always danger of going back to your original activities, because those activities have not been replaced with spiritual activities. So artificial renunciation only by analysis, like in this verse, will not help you. What has to be done is you have to replace your material activities properly, systematically, with spiritual activities. In Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter also, Krishna says that yagya dana tapah karma na tyajyam karyam eva tat. Yagya danam tapas chaiva pavanani manishina. He says some activities like sacrificing, charity, tapa, austerity should not be renounced. If somebody thinks that by practicing Sankhya Yoga, by doing analysis, I'll give up my material activities. Even Krishna says, Pavanani Manishina, even intelligent people, even advanced people are purified. So even if you are a very highly advanced spiritualist, don't think that by giving up such activities like charity, austerity, you'll advance. No. In fact, by doing these activities, Yagya Danam Tapaschaiva, Pavanani Manishina. So activities should not be renounced. What is to be renounced is materialistic activities or activities that are harmful to our spiritual growth. Whereas a person engaged in devotional service, he actively engages himself in different kinds of activities. But these activities are not ordinary activities. These activities are connected to God. They are connected to Krishna. So there is purification that is happening, because Krishna is the source of all purity. Krishna is all good. So how can there be any bad? How can there be any inauspiciousness? How can there be any impurity when you are connected with God, when you are connected with Krishna? So active engagement in devotional service is much better than artificial renunciation based on analysis. Like in our case, directly watering the root of the tree is much better than just analyzing and stopping there. In fact, Lord Krishna, he does not want us to remain in an impure state, and that is why he purifies us. Our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada gives a very nice example. He says, an iron rod, if you keep it for a long time in fire, it becomes fiery. It acquires the properties of fire. Similarly, you and me, although we are contaminated, if we chant the holy names, if we worship the Lord, if we take prasad, by long contact with God, we'll also get purified. Just like an iron rod in touch with fire gets fiery, it acquires the properties of fire. Similarly, in long contact with God, we'll also acquire the qualities of God. So, the detachment that is talked of by Krishna in this verse, ekam api astita samyag, is not detachment from activities, but it is detachment from the proclivity, the tendency to enjoy those activities. Activities are there. In devotional service, there are a lot of activities. But unless we are doing devotional activities, we are doing spiritual activities, there will always be a tendency to enjoy those activities. Because you don't have anybody to offer the activity to. If you are practicing spiritual life, you have God, you have your spiritual master to offer the fruits of your activity to. But in material life, there's nobody. You are the only one who's supposed to enjoy. So then, there are problems there. That's why it is explained by Lord Krishna in the 18th chapter, Nahi deha bhritam shakyam tyaktum karmani asheshatah. Yastu karma falat tyagi sa tyagi idi abhidiyate. He mentions, he explains the concept of a tyagi, a renouncer. Who is a tyagi? He says, for a living entity, it's not possible to renounce action. But who is a tyagi? Yastu karma falat tyagi. A person who renounces the fruit, karma fal, the fruit of his actions, ही इज ए त्यागी, नॉट ए पर्सन हु रिनाउंसेस कर्म, हु रिनाउंसेस एक्टिविटीज. ओनली थिंग इज वी हैव टू अंडरस्टैंड वॉट एक्टिविटी शुड बी प्रैक्टिस्ड, वॉट एक्टिविटी शुड बी डन. एंड वी रिनाउंस द टेंडेंसी टू एन्जॉय द फ्रूट्स ऑफ अवर एक्टिविटी. इफ यू डू दैट, ऑल्दो यू मे बी एंगेज इन एक्टिविटीज, यू आर स्टिल ए त्यागी, यू आर स्टिल ए रिनाउंसर. नाउ गोइंग बैक टू अवर ओरिजिनल एग्जाम्पल ऑफ ट्री एंड रूट्स, somebody could raise this point that the person who watered the root of the tree directly, in one sense, is ignorant, because he just watered. He was told by his father, gardener, that water the root of the tree, and he did that. Now, yes, accepted that the mangoes from both the tree, the fruits from both the trees will taste the same, even if you do it in knowledge or if you do it without knowledge. Now, when it comes to devotional service, the same example, if somebody takes, he could say, see, there is some person who analyzed systematically that whatever belongs to this world cannot be enjoyed because it is temporary. And so this person who now takes to devotional service based on his knowledge, he is a better devotee than a person who directly took to devotional service without knowledge. It's accepted now. At this point, we have come to a point where we understand that artificial renunciation based on knowledge is not good. It can again pull you back. The desires in your heart, because they are still there, they can pull you back to your original activities. And a person who's engaged in spiritual activities is much better than this person. Now let's talk of a situation where you have this person who renounced based on his knowledge, and now in his renunciation he takes to devotional life. And you had a devotee who did not ever undergo all this complicated analysis like our simple gardener, and now he is also a devotee, he is also taken to devotional service. Now, does it mean that this person who underwent all analysis and now he is a devotee, now he has come to the right point, is much better than this person? No. Once you come to devotional service, then there is no differentiation between two devotees. How? Lord Krishna himself clarifies. He mentions that tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. He says, tesham satata yuktanam, if somebody is always engaged in remembering me, satata yuktanam, bhajatam priti purvakam, and they worship me with love, dadami buddhi yogam tam, I give them that understanding, yena mam upayantite, by which they will come back to me. So you had one person who has now come to devotional service after undergoing all that difficult, complicated analysis, and you had one devotee who has also come to the right conclusion, but then he didn't undergo all analysis. He was just told by his superiors, you do this, and he's doing that. But because he has taken to the right process, because he is following the right conclusion, Lord Krishna himself promises that I'll give him knowledge, I'll give him the proper understanding. Next verse he says, tesham eva anukampartham aham agyana jamtamah nashayami atma bhavasto jnana deepena bhasvata. He says, if there is somebody who's always remembering me, tesham eva anukampartham, just to give them special mercy, just to have mercy on them, aham agyana jamtamah, the darkness in their heart that is born out of ignorance, nashayami, I will destroy that with the lamp of knowledge, jnana deepena bhasvata. So even if somebody argues that, my dear sir, all right, not coming to devotional life, not coming to spiritual life is certainly not the right way. Yes, you have to come to devotional life. But if somebody with knowledge comes to devotional life, then he's much better. An ignorant person becoming a devotee is not much better. But no, Krishna promises that if you come to devotional life, if you come to Krishna consciousness, although you may not have complicated understanding of this world, although all of us may not have undergone Sankhya Yoga difficult process to understand what is earth, how many different types of fires are there, how many different types of airs are there, and what are the karmendriyas and what are the gyanendriyas and this and that, Krishna promises us that Krishna will reveal all this knowledge to us from within the heart. His devotees also promise this. They say, in the Bhagavatam it is mentioned, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayajatya Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahetukam. Says Vasudeva Bhagavati, if somebody renders devotional service to Vasudev, to Lord Krishna, then what happens? Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahetukam. Very soon, Ashu, Jnanam and Vairagya, नॉलेज एंड रिनन्सिएशन विल मैनिफेस्ट इन हिज हार्ट अहेतुकम. उसका कोई हेतु नहीं है. देर इज नो रीजन. देर इज नथिंग दैट द डिवोटी डिड दैट डिमांडेड दैट वैराग्य एंड नॉलेज स्प्राउट इन हिज हार्ट. नो, जस्ट बाय हिज क्वालिफिकेशन दैट ही इज अ डिवोटी ऑफ लॉर्ड, वैराग्य एंड ज्ञान, नॉलेज एंड रिनन्सिएशन विल ऑटोमेटिकली कम. सो ऑन वन साइड यू हैव द सांख्य योगीज एज मेंशन्ड बाय कृष्णा हु अंडरगो ऑल टीडियस स्टडी. दे ट्राइंग टू अंडरस्टैंड वॉट इज दिस, वॉट इज दैट, हाउ टू अंडरस्टैंड दिस, हाउ टू अंडरस्टैंड दैट. एंड ऑन अदर साइड यू हैव अ सिंपल डिवोटी हु जस्ट चैंट्स हरे कृष्ण जस्ट बिकॉज कृष्णा सेज मन मना भव मद भक्तो आचार्य से कलेर दोष निधे राजन अस्थि एको महान गुण कीर्तना देव कृष्ण से. ऑन द बेसिस ऑफ हिज चैंटिंग, ऑन द बेसिस ऑफ हिज फॉलोइंग द इंस्ट्रक्शंस ऑफ द लॉर्ड, लॉर्ड कृष्णा हिमसेल्फ प्रोमिसेस दैट आई विल रिवील ऑल नॉलेज, वॉट एवर इज नेसेसरी फॉर यू, योगक्षेमम वहाम्यहम, वॉट एवर इज नेसेसरी आई विल रिवील इट टू यू, डोंट वरी अबाउट अंडर गोइंग ए टीडियस स्टडी. सो हुएवर वी आर, whether we are a foolish person, whether we are a intelligent person, whether we are a philosopher, whether we are a scientist, whether we are a small child studying in school, whether we are a PhD who's teaching students in a school or in a college, it always is, it behooves us, as they say, it will be very good on our part if we take up to devotional service. And then when Krishna says sankhya yoga prithak bala pravadanti na pandita, then as a pandit, because on the basis of that knowledge, you will become an intelligent person. Then you will see that actually Sankhya Yoga, a real student of Sankhya Yoga and a real student of devotional service, there's no difference. Both will engage in devotional service at the end of their search for knowledge. And going back to our original example, he, the son, the Lord, I'm just connecting the examples that we discussed in our class. Just like the sun illuminates everything, the Lord illuminates everything in our heart, the knowledge. And then we will get the, when we will water the root of the tree, we were seeing how the gardener waters the root of the tree. And what is the fruit of the tree? The tree is love for God. Then we'll get love for God. So this is the process that is given by Krishna. And that is why he says that for a pandit, for an intelligent person, renunciation, true renunciation, and engagement in devotional service, there is no difference. For a person who's engaged in devotional service is as good as a person who underwent all difficult and systematic study and then took to devotional service. Eventually, in due course of time, all that knowledge is going to be revealed to a sincere practitioner of devotional service. And that's why in the Bhagavatam, I'll end with this, said, Akamova sarva kamova moksha kamova udaradhi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushaparam. What does it mention? It is akamova. Akamova means you don't have any desire to enjoy this material world. You don't have any other desire. Sarva kamova. Sarva kamova means your heart is bursting with material desires. So the shloka gives us two diverse viewpoints. One is you don't have any material desire, and one is your heart is full of material desires. A kamova, sarva kamova, moksha kamova udaradhi. And even if you don't have any material desire, but you have desire for transcendence, you want moksha. You want something, you have a desire that is pertaining to the other world. So a kamova, sarva kamova or moksha kamova udaradhi, in all these three cases, what is advised? Tivrena, tivra roop se, very intensely, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushaparam. You should worship the Supreme Lord by practicing the process of bhakti. So whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you are, please practice bhakti. That is advised by this verse from the Bhagavatam. So I'll stop here. If somebody has any comments, if somebody wants any clarifications, if somebody has any questions, then we can take a few.
Hare Rama, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
We talked about the activities, karma. And we have to be in activities.
Yeah.
What is the kind of the right activities, what we call karma? How can we decide? Because every activity has, like, you know, you say, satya mein hi asatya hai, asatya mein hi satya hai. Suppose for me, a businessman, he will sound me selfish But if I am in the role of his shoes, for him, his activities are righteous. So what will decide the righteousness of karmas? How can we decide that?
All right. I'll just ask you a question. There was once a sage who had taken an oath, who had taken a vow, not to speak lies. Because you mentioned the satya and asatya, I was reminded of this example. He took a vow that I'll never speak lies, I'll always speak the truth. One day as he was sitting for meditation, he saw one cow going by. And not only going by, this cow was actually frantically running. He saw it, didn't strike him in a big way, but he just saw that cow went by. After some time, he saw four or five people with swords or daggers in their hand and looked like they were very frightening people. So they came to this sage and they asked him, did you see a cow running in this way, by this way? Did you see a cow? Now what do you think this person did? He's caught in a dilemma because he had taken a vow not to speak lies. So now if he says that yes, I just saw a cow going by this way, what does he do? He engages somebody in cow slaughter, which is not sanctioned, which is very bad, killing a cow. At the same time, if he speaks lies and says that, no, I don't know, I didn't see a cow, I was in meditation, he breaks his vow, he breaks his oath, which is also not good. So what does he do? So these are some of the questions that are raised when you try to go deeper, and it's a good question that you're asking. If I would have been in his case, I would have just remained silent. I don't speak the truth, neither do I speak the lies. So I'm not speaking the lies, so I don't break my vow. At the same time, I don't speak the truth, whereby I engage somebody in cow slaughter. So sometimes, yes, things may not be very clear as to what is right and what is wrong. In these cases, you have to take advice or you have to take guidance from somebody who is knowledgeable. Because with our limited intelligence, with our limited understanding of things, we may not always be able to clear things into good or bad, true or untrue. Life, sometimes they say, life is not just white and black, it's a lot of shades of grey in between. So very difficult sometimes, yes. Some activities, what is right, what is wrong. And if we have some guidance from somebody who himself is at an elevated position, he may not be at the highest position, but he's surely elevated than us. Then we can take guidance from him, and then in our own particular condition, in our own particular situation that we are in, we'll be helped. Like that. All right? Does this satisfy you? Thank you.
What I understood is, at that moment, what is yogya?
Yeah.
So that is what we need to understand.
Yeah.
Suppose if we still don't, then we need the guidance.
Yeah. So my question to you was, I didn't stop there because it's, you know, time is not on our side. It's already time for darshan. But if I would have stopped at this question, what do you do? Do you speak truth or do you speak lies? What would your answer would have been? I gave you my answer. What would your answer? If you were the sage and you have taken that vow and you have seen that cow, what would you, how would you have reacted? It's difficult, is it not? So many times things are not so easy. I gave you that conclusion to save time, but in that process, I think I lost you. You didn't understand that sometimes things are not so clear. So that person surely must have been puzzled for some time. So we don't know what he did, but this is a situation to help us understand that many times, although we have a lot of knowledge and we have some understanding, we may not be able to differentiate what is good and what is bad. So in these situations, you can take guidance from somebody. Somebody who has read the Bhagavad Gita, and we have not read Bhagavad Gita, so he has a deeper understanding, so he can help us like that. But yes, when things are very clear, no cow slaughter. So yes, maybe he would have spoken lies and said, yes, I saw a cow going in that opposite direction. Maybe that would have helped. But I'm just giving you different perspectives. So if you don't know, then instead of taking the wrong decision, it would help us to take decisions based on guidance from somebody higher. That will help us. All right? We had some question here. Yeah. Mic is coming.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the lecture. You said something regarding this renunciation and devotional service. Those who do devotional service without renunciation and those who after renunciation they do devotional service, both are in same footing. both are in same level. But in the, this age, particularly in the age of Kali, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Hare Naam, Hare Naam, Hare Naam ki eva kevalam, that eva nasti, eva nasti, eva gattir anyatha. And that devotional service and Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that whenever are renounced or in material world, who is surrendering to me, then only he can means approach for devotional service. But in this age, it is very difficult. And as per Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that only by chanting the holy names, you will go back to the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. So that means that is the devotional service. What I will understand that only doing kirtan and in this age of Kali, it is very difficult to do devotional service. And suppose one only chants the holy names, can he go back to the Godhead?
There is absolutely absolute truth in your statement that simply by chanting the holy names, you'll go back home, back to Godhead. However, my understanding of this concept is, yes, we can chant and we can go back home. However, because of our conditioning, because of our environment, because of our surroundings, we don't have implicit faith in the holy names. We don't have strong faith in the holy names. So, without proper knowledge and without engaging ourselves in activities, if we just sit in one corner and chant the holy names, because that is the way, Hare Naam, Hare Naam, Hare Naam, Iva Kevalam, how long will we do that? If somebody comes to us and says, why are you chanting this mantra? Why don't you chant this other mantra? Why don't you chant Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola? That's also a mantra. How long will we be able to still continue having faith in Hare Krishna? How will we be able to make him convince that no, only the holy names of the Lord, Hare Naam, not any other Naam. So, yes, if somebody is very simple, if somebody has implicit faith in the holy names, that is sufficient in and of itself to carry you back home, back to Godhead. But for most of us, we are not there. Most of us, we need reasoning. Most of us, we need a justification of why we should chant and what are the effects of chanting the holy name and what are the characteristics of the holy name. And explanation is required for us to get convinced. Somebody is simple, some simple villager, he just hears the holy name, gets attracted to it, chants it, he can go back home. There's nothing that stops him. But for people like you and me, I'll talk about myself. I need a lot of justification. I need a lot of understanding to keep chanting. If I don't have this logic, if I don't have this understanding that is mentioned in books, I think I'll not chant for long. When we see people who are really advancing in their lives, who have chanted, and because of that they are advancing, then we get faith. When we see books that mention, yes, Hare Naam, Hare Naam, Hare Naam, Iva Kevalam, then we get faith. So we require some support systems to advance. However, these systems in and of itself will not carry us back home, back to Godhead. Just by reading different scriptures, we cannot go back home, back to Godhead. We have to arrive at a conclusion. The conclusion is Hare Naam. But to arrive at that conclusion, it's better always to have a support of intelligence, of logic, of faith. You have to have faith. If you're just chanting like a parrot also chants. But he'll not go home back to Godhead because he does not have any faith in that holy name. Parrot can chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But his chanting and your chanting, there will be difference. Why? Because you have faith in the power of the holy name. A parrot does not have faith. He does not have that much intelligence. So empty chanting will also not take us anywhere. You understand? There has to be a lot of quality to that chanting. By an empty bullet, nobody dies. It just produces some sound. There has to be some substance inside. Then a person is hurt. All right, let's stop here. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan ki, Lalita Devi Vishakha Devi ki.